Welcome to Audiobiography, the podcast, where we discuss the music that changed our lives and yours. I'm your host, Richie Wagner, with my co-host, Clint Robinette. Clint, how are you doing today, sir?
Good Sunday afternoon to you, Richie.
Feels like we just did this, like last Sunday. Yeah?
We did.
Well, I'm very happy that we're trying to make this weekly. And I said before that we were going to have guests. And just so happens, we didn't realize it would happen so quickly. We do have one now. And Clint, I'm going to let you introduce.
Yeah, we do have a guest. Our guest today is my friend Josh here in Columbus. Josh, I'll let you speak just a moment, but I have a funny story already about this guy, Rich. So I was telling him about our podcast, and he eyes lit up because Josh is interested in maybe starting a podcast soon. And he's got some great ideas, so I'm really excited to see what he's going to do once he gets off the ground. But I talked to him about this concept, about what we're doing, picking the top 10 albums. I was like, hey, Josh, you know, just pick a year and pick some albums. And yeah, just get back to me, man. No rush. And it was like the next day, it seemed like, Josh comes to, like, stopped by the house and had a whole sheet of paper with his five albums and some talking points. I'm like, okay, let's rock and roll. So Josh, take a few minutes, tell us about yourself.
Hey, everybody. Josh Huth. I'm an Ohioan. Grew up here in Ohio. Grew up in Youngstown. I think Youngstown was murder capital of the country per capita when I graduated high school. So not to say I wanted to get out of there quickly, but there was reason to flee. So I headed down to Columbus, and I've been here 26 years now, minus a year where I lived in Lexington, Kentucky for work. That was a strange year. Prior to me being married, actually, I lived in Lexington when 9/11 happened. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a time frame there. But married, four kids. My oldest is a senior in high school. My youngest is in third grade. Two boys, two girls. Oldest and youngest are boys, and girls in the middle. So I'll graduate 3 in 3 years. So bank accounts looking forward to that with college, but we'll see what happens. You know, I'm a lover of music. My parents divorced when I was 2 years old, and making those, my dad lived about 3 hours away, western side of Ohio, and making those road trips, you know, every other weekend, we listened to a lot of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, The Byrds, Neil Young, Peter, Paul & Mary, Simon & Garfunkel. And then my dad was a big records guy, and just going through peach boxes, you know, the old peach boxes filled up with records, and just the whole thing of putting an album on a record and dropping the needle and just the nostalgia behind that. But I remember as a kid loving to do that. And then actually, like, when I was 12, my buddy's dad took me to my first concert. It was a really, really good one. And I think, Clint, you might be a little bit jealous of this one. It was Genesis.
What?
At Three Rivers in Pittsburgh.
I don't think we've talked about this. So, yeah. So you keep going. I need to ask questions about that. But yeah. Keep going, Josh. Oh, my goodness.
So I went to Genesis, and I loved it. It was, what album was I Can't Dance on?
We Can't Dance.
Or We Can't Dance. It's been a while. That was the name of the album? Yeah, that was their headline tour for that. So I don't remember a ton about it. I remember that Phil did probably like a 12-minute drum solo that was pretty cool. I thought that was pretty awesome. I remember that we had pretty good seats, and I liked it a lot. Like, 2 weeks later, he took me to see Jimmy Buffett, and I think a 12-year-old seeing Jimmy Buffett was a little bit traumatizing to me. And I didn't go to another show until I was 16, 17 years old. So.
What's traumatizing about it? Just all the people or what the activities?
While he was there, he stepped on a pop top and blew out his flip flop. That's very
exactly. Traumatizing. Yeah. It was
the worst.
It was a summer concert outdoor, and there was some nudity possibly, and not just of the female persuasion. And when you're 12, oh, you know, like I didn't get it. And a lot of drunk people. So, yeah, I didn't know that I wanted to be a, what do they call them? Finheads or whatever. After that, the summer I turned 21, I think I probably saw give or take 500 bands that summer. I used to do a ton of, so I went to, that was Woodstock 99 was that summer. I went to Woodstock 99, a couple Warped Tours in there. I was kind of into punk music at that time. So yeah, that was a fun year. And now that I have kids, I took Grace to her first concert when she was 9 at the Horseshoe. And it was One Direction. You know, maybe not necessarily my choice of music, but she really enjoyed it. And with that, we're going to go see Zach Bryan this summer. She likes him a lot. I think he's pretty cool. So we're going to see him at the Horseshoe. Last fall of 2022, sorry, Grace was 16, and we went and saw, kind of full circle, we went to our second concert together. We went and saw Harry Styles at Madison Square Garden, and we did like a couple days in New York. And when I say we got close, we were maybe closest we were 6 feet, 8 feet from Harry Styles. We were right there. And when you leave the show and your daughter says to you, he made direct eye contact with me at least 3 times. You know that you were, you made her day. So that was pretty cool. You know, I think Harry Styles is pretty good for his genre. Probably not something I would necessarily pursue myself, but getting into it for my daughter, I actually think he's a pretty good musician, and he's got some pretty good music. So,
well, that's one thing that, I'm certainly become more, my music taste is still what it is, but I'm more open to current music because of my kids.
Yeah.
And one thing I'm thinking about, Josh, while you're talking about experiencing that with your daughter, is how your experience is very similar to Richie's experience with his daughter and experiencing a new band. And I'm referring to the Rocket Summer, which Brianna's huge fan of. And she got Rich and to become a fan, and he became a fan of them. And that's something that they share together.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I didn't know you were going to, I know that story. You've told me that story, but Rich has not heard that. So that's a really good connection point. So we've got all kinds of connection points so far with Josh here.
Yeah,
absolutely. I had a direction or two. Brianna was hugely into One Direction and had a fan account on Twitter where she had, at one point she had like 10,000 followers, and
wow,
which was very low for, you know, the big time directioners.
Right.
She was really, really happy and proud that her Twitter.
That's what they're called? The directioners.
Yeah. That was one of the names. There are some other ones, but that's the one I always like the most. Cause it sounds kind of stupid.
A mouthful.
The best nicknames are the dumb ones. And that one's pretty dumb. So I like it.
Yeah,
yeah, but true. Brianna and I are she's my music kid, and yeah, we do the concert thing together and all that. So good times. You're always like super dad when you're able to take your kid to see their hero and have the experience like 6 feet away, or like when Brianna and I go to see Bryce with the Rocket Summer. His name's Bryce Avery. We always get the VIPs. So we get to go early and hang out and talk with him, and
that's cool,
and do that whole thing. And so, yeah, it's very important, I think, to share our music with our kids, because no matter what my parents did right or wrong, the one thing that they did do correctly was share their music and their love of music, my life would not be the same. So, no, yeah. Cool, man. That's so great that you and your kids do that stuff. So,
it's fun.
Well, we are in 1973 now. I'm one. You guys aren't here yet.
No. But,
a lot of music here that we know and lots of other people know, and we're going to go through our five albums each like we did last week, Clint and I. That was fun, and I'm looking forward to this. It's even better to get like this third viewpoint, so I'm really looking forward to that. Matter of fact, I have some things to say about some of Josh's list, so I'm excited about that. I'm going to start, so I'll go with my number five. And just to remind everyone, since this is a new series, no rules here. These are just our favorites. It's in the spirit of the podcast, autobiography. These are the things that stick with us, that we bring along from the beginning of our life to now. It's just the things that were important to us. At least that's how I'm doing it. So I am starting with what is not even close to Wings' best album. It's not close to the best of anything Paul McCartney, but I'm going with Red Rose Speedway. And here's why. It's a short album. There really aren't great songs on it. Big Barn Bed's pretty good. You know, it's a fun song. It opens up with that one. But the reason I'm picking it is My Love, which is, you know, just a goofy little ballady love song. Paul was good at those. But it's special to me because somewhere, I don't know, it was probably around 80 or 81. So I'm 8 or 9 years old. And one of my mother's friends gives us a little suitcase 45 record player, you know, popped open. And we got an entire box of 45s. I don't know. There was probably a couple hundred in there. And one of them was My Love. I liked all the ones in the box that I at least knew a little bit about. Like, I'd heard My Love on the radio. I think Good Vibrations was in there. Everybody knows Good Vibrations. Some other ones on here was like Rockin' Robin by the Jackson 5. But I always went back to My Love because in second grade, I had a teacher who introduced me to the Beatles. My parents did too, but not the way my second grade teacher did. She was a huge fan. So I already knew who Paul McCartney was. So, you know, I've got a record that's got Paul McCartney on it now, you know. So that's really the only reason that this thing gets in my top five. When we go through honorable mentions at the end, I'm going to tell you all kinds of records that I think are way better, but they don't have that pull on me the way that this one does. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Red Rose Speedway. Again, it's the second of two albums. Well, I guess it came first. I can't remember the order, but he had two that year. The other one, it's 180 from this one. But I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on this kind of probably what most people think is a piece of trash?
It is not a piece of trash. While it's not in my top five, I love this album. Yeah, there's only has one hit on it, right? But Big Barn Bed is such a great song. That's Toe Tapper. Now, it's a good choice, Rich. I love Paul. We talk a lot about Paul McCartney. I think on that album, he was getting his groove. I mean, obviously he was about to hit his stride because we're going to talk about another album. I don't want to say too much about it, but 73 seemed to be Paul getting his feet underneath him, getting his confidence back after it was shattered after, you know, the Beatles broke up. And yeah. Good choice, man. Love it. Josh, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know anything about that album other than My Love and knowing that song. And it's a great song. But yeah, I don't know that album.
And that's fair. That's totally fair. There's not much there that just the general public knows. So
yeah.
Just one last thing before, Clint, you do your pick. This record, My Love, the song, it is it has one of those McCartneyisms in it that he's so famous for, the nonsense lyric. And I just think it's so funny. And I didn't realize how nonsense it was until I heard Cher's cover of this song. And so when Cher's cover, again, she's doing the whoa, whoa. Oh my God. Ridiculous. So Paul meant to put some words there, and just in classic Paul fashion, oh, you know what? Those whoa, they sound just fine. And he didn't, he just never finished the lyric. So just funny story there. And like, his entire catalog is just rife with that stuff where he put in a nonsense lyric, meaning to go back, put something real in there. And then when he's listening to it again, you know, I guess he's just like, nah, man, that's pretty cool. I think I'm going to just leave that. Anyway, go check out Cher's cover. Wow. Okay, Clint,
that's great.
Okay. All right. Clint, a nugget. So, Clint, what is your number five?
All right, number five for me is Tres Hombres by ZZ Top. This will probably be the only ZZ Top album that makes it in my top five, but to me is far and away their best album, and it is such a solid album. Now, ZZ Top was a band I listened to a lot when I was younger. Getting into rock music, you know my story, Led Zeppelin, the Beatles didn't come until later, a lot of Genesis, but there was an era where I got into Boston, the Eagles, and my dad still is a huge ZZ Top fan, and it was a double album, it was a six CD, it was a box set called the Six Pack, but it was the first six albums for ZZ Top. That was my introduction to, you know, a lot of early ZZ Top, and I had a couple of their greatest hits albums. But this album, to me, it has stuff a greatest hits album wouldn't have on it. But the way this album starts is one of the strongest starts to an album one could have, with Waiting for the Bus going right into Jesus Just Left Chicago. Man, it doesn't get much better than that. Those guys were such good musicians, and they could really play well together. Let me say this. Nothing they ever did was like earth-shattering. It's not like listening to Rush. It's not like listening to Paul McCartney or The Who, where you're just blown away by the musicianship, but they could play well together. Yep. And they played a style of music that really worked for them. And I don't know what you call this, blues-based rock. I guess that's the best thing you can call it. And I don't like a ton of music in the genre, but this album will always be there for me. I can always listen to those tracks. And their biggest hit probably as a band is LaGrange. Yeah. I mean, you could make an argument for Legs, but to me, you know, probably the biggest hit is LaGrange. Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers. That'd be a fun, did we try to do that? Or did you all cover that in your band, Rich?
We did. Yeah, that was one of the ZZ Top songs that we did. We also did Waiting for the Bus. You were talking about how it starts, just how the album begins, just that riff in Waiting for the Bus.
That's awesome.
I've many times just sat and didn't know what to play on my guitar when I was, you know, going to practice or something like that. And I'm just playing that over and over and over. So good. I love this album. But don't you think like Tube Steak Boogie or something like that's better?
If I could throw something and hit you with it, I would right now.
What about Sleeping Bag, Clint?
Oh my God. See, that's the thing. Okay. Rabbit Trail. There's so much bad.
I like to troll Clint. So you're gonna get a hefty dose of that.
He mashed all the buttons at once. You didn't throw Planet of Women in there.
Oh God.
Yeah. So as a kid, like, I'm like, oh, these are cool songs. But then, you know, as I get older and I don't have as much time and my, you know, what I think is good changes. I mean, I still think a lot of ZZ Top is good, but what you just mentioned, I would be just fine if I never heard it again.
I played LaGrange a lot on Guitar Hero. That was a fun one to play, you know, growing up listening to Legs, but I think ZZ Top for me was never really a band that I necessarily pursued. Good music, and I think a lot of people would say great music for them. But for me, yeah, LaGrange is a great song, and but it was never, never really something I pursued.
I'm the same. This is my favorite album by them. My favorite songs by them are on this album. If I only had this album, I would be fine. That's kind of where I am with them.
That's exactly how I feel. So that's my number five. So, Josh.
Yeah.
Throw some different in here. What do you got, man?
Well, I'll go a little bit different than what you guys typically talk about. When I was young and angsty, I kind of got into, I alluded earlier, I kind of got into punk music. I went to a MXPX show, which, you know, they were Christians in a punk band. They were on a Christian label. And I heard a couple of their songs and I just felt like, okay, this is cool. This is fun. Went to a show. Somebody asked me to go. And it was just, you know, kind of blind fun. I don't know. It was just poppy and simple chords. And I think I was trying to be a bass guitar player at the time. It was like, okay, I can play this stuff. And then with trying to play bass, I'm like, well, I should learn some more stuff. And I started getting into, you know, deeper cuts of punk music. And it kind of all starts with the Stooges, right? I know some people will say the Sex Pistols, but for me, Search and Destroy. So the Stooges' Raw Power is the album. And the title track is Search and Destroy. It's just really aggressive, you know, Iggy Pop. When this album came out, the band had actually broken up at the time. David Bowie is helping Iggy Pop's heroin addiction is really, really bad at this point in time. And David Bowie intervened, you know, has an intervention with him and, you know, they got back together or whatever, but it was for me, this album was just really, really great. Specifically Search and Destroy was just real angsty, kind of where I was in my life and trying to get into punk music and being out on my own and figuring out life. Death Trip is another great song for me. And Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. So I don't know if you guys have listened to this album or not, or know anything about the Stooges, but for me, this was just a really, 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 really good album of like getting into punk music, kind of learning the roots of punk. And so I like this one a lot.
So somewhere along the way, I decided that the Stooges and Iggy Pop, that it wasn't for me. I don't know when that was. I don't even know why, because it was a long time ago. So I'd really not listened. And then we got your list and I was like, okay, I need to listen to this because we're going to talk about it. Let me see what I think. And this is what I love about doing a podcast like this. So like, I think it's good to tell the story of our lives with the music, but also the second part of it is learning about other music from other people that somehow you missed. Like it doesn't matter why, but you missed it. It just passed you by. This record, and specifically, Search and Destroy. Obviously, it leads the record. So it's the first thing that I heard. I was sitting there listening, thinking, why did I not go for this before? Because, I don't know, new ears, different ears, new point in my life, whatever. I was like, this is amazing. This guitar player, and I went and looked it up. His name's James Williamson. I'm like, this guitar player is playing like Keith Richards on a cocktail of steroids and cocaine. And the drummer sounds like he's the son of Keith Moon. And it's all with this driving punk thing. And I was like, this is punk. This is punk rock. This is where it started. I was like, oh my God, it's not even proto punk. It's straight up punk music right here, or at least punk rock. I listened to the whole record. The title track's really good too. That's another one of those where, you know, the guitar player is just like, it's like some crazy Keith Richards, which is wild because he's crazy already. But I really enjoyed it. And I texted Clint earlier today and I was like, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go down this rabbit hole and just kind of start looking at the whole catalog, at least, you know, Iggy wise. And no, I thought it was great. And it was just a new experience for me, even though I know I'd heard it before. And, you know, probably back in the past, I was probably turned off by like what he looked like and how he acted and things like that, because I was probably, you know, there was a time where I was just pretty judgmental because of church and things of that nature. And I had to get all that stuff out of my system. So once I did, you know, it does open up a whole new world of music. And no, thanks for sharing this one. Enjoyed it, Clint.
Yeah. So I've got some homework to do because this is not on my radar. My punk really starts with The Clash. So, and we'll talk about them once they get on the scene in the late 70s. But yeah, I'm going to go check this out and give it a try. But good choice, Josh. A little bit of variety and something, you know. Now, the beauty of this list, doing it like this, is we're stretching out, you know, our musical boundaries. And so stuff that's been out for how long has this been out now? For 51 years, and it's still something you can discover. Isn't that amazing?
My next pick, it's number 4 on my list for this year, is Countdown to Ecstasy by Steely Dan. You know, unapologetically, if Steely Dan had a release that year, it's going to make my top 5. It just will. This record did not have the same sort of hit power, or I guess you would say songs that had decades of staying power, but it was still an evolution of what they were already doing. And my favorite song here is probably the same as most Dan fans would be, My Old School. That's the song about the drug bust at their college, and him and Walter Becker and the girlfriend went to jail. And it's a good song. And the reason that, and I would not have known about this song or even this album growing up, wouldn't have had a clue. I would have only known what Clint and I talked about last week, things like Reeling in the Years and Do It Again and just the hits. So when I finally figured out who they really were and found out that I loved their music, this became one of my favorite albums of theirs, just because the musicianship on this, that's always great. They're the best. They only hire the best, period. But if you go and listen to this record and you listen to the vocals, the layering and the harmony, and a lot of times it's not even harmony. It's just they've layered and layered and layered. And like, there's like, it's just this big, full, huge sound. It's one of the best sounding albums of this era, I think. The production's amazing. It's funny, when I was listening to Raw Power, it's a different kind of production. Obviously, it's more literally, yeah, it's literally raw. And it sounds like dirty and ugly and like you're, you know, in a sweaty pit somewhere listening to music. And then I switched over to listen to some Countdown to Ecstasy, and it's this clean, pristine, just very pretty jazz rock. But it just shows that both ways can have, you know, a powerful impact. And I'm just, this album, this is the albums that when I hear them, I think, I wish I could sing this way. I wish I could arrange music this way. Walter Becker and Donald Fagen, the arrangements on this album are just crazy. Yeah, that's really, in a nutshell, why this one, I guess it's going to make the list anyway, because I listen to it all the time. But I guess that's my defense of why it's here. So, Clint, you want to?
Oh, I love this album. So one of my favorite Steely Dan songs is My Old School. I don't know what I love most about that song. I think
it's not like the other songs on the record, for one thing.
It's really not, is
it's
it?
Just, it's and, a rock and roll song, and they don't do a lot of rock and roll. It's rock and roll as they would do it.
Yeah, but it feels personal to me, because of somebody that's, you know, I moved away from the place I grew up, and I just recently left, you know, 6 months ago, I left a company that I worked 15 years for. I mean, I'm thankful for everything that I have now, but that's one of those songs that I can listen to and it I really resonate with what they're singing in the song. I'm never going back to my old school. And it's, to me, it's, I have the memories. I can appreciate the memories and be thankful for that, but I'm moving on and I have moved on. And there's hope in that for me. I think, I don't know, the thing I love about Steely Dan, the musicianship is always first class, but I think he, I just love his songwriting. What's not to love? So Josh, any thoughts about the Dan?
So the Dan for me is, I don't even know if I'm going to say it right. Aja, am I saying it wrong?
Yeah, Aja. I think it's
Aja. Aja. Sorry. Yeah, that's the only Steely Dan album that I have. And
that's the one to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I enjoy it a lot. But that's really, outside of like when Donald Fagen played it, George Harrison's tribute, right? Outside of that, that's all, that's my dive into Steely Dan.
Okay, my number four pick is also, Rich, your number one pick. It is Band on the Run by Paul McCartney and Wings.
Masterpiece.
I'm surprised. It is a masterpiece, and I'm surprised in myself a little bit that it's only at number four. But as you're going to see, there was a lot of excellent music come out in 1973. So as much as I listen and re-listen and re-listen to this album, it's at number four for me this week. next week and a month from now, that could change. This has obviously title track, Band on the Run, one of my favorite Paul McCartney songs in Jet. But just let me roll it. And, a track that I was telling you. So, Spotify, when Spotify came out, I was a little hesitant to dive into it. But since then, I've used it to introduce myself to so much music. And how you can do that is you can select a band and you can hit, like, this happened on Talking Heads Radio. And I thought this was really interesting. So I'm listening to Talking Heads Radio. And then 1985 from this album comes on that playlist. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then you think about, and we could talk for days about how Paul, even outside the Beatles, and you just start talking about Wings and his solo work, how he influenced so many artists. But that song does not sound like anything else on that album. And it sounds like a bit of a weird song on that album, but I love it. You can tell it's got, it's very influential in some music going on at that time and later on down the road. So one of my favorites, I could sing its praises all day.
To me, it is a masterpiece. The second side, which is where 1985 is, it ends the album, but it's not as well known, but it works, and it works really well for me. But no, I mean, you start with Band on the Run. Let's just talk about the title track. I know that a lot of people are probably sick of it and they've heard it until they're ready to not hear it anymore, but just epic. It's classic McCartney medley type writing. And he's such a scatterbrain, man, like in the best way possible. When he goes into the studio, he's got just like snippets of songs that they don't even come close to being fully formed. And he just has this way of going, I want to take this one, this snippet and this one, and I think I can make a whole, and then something like Band on the Run happens. Then also, some kind of garbagey stuff happens with that too. I mean, he's my hero, but I know what his foibles are. But he nailed it with Band on the Run. Just, it's a classic. It's without a doubt, I don't know, it's got to be one of the best known of, it's got to be one of his best known songs, right? Outside of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Can't think of too many more. I mean, some stuff in the 80s maybe, but everybody knows this song. And then Jet, I vaguely remember hearing this in the car on the radio when I was a kid, because it, through the 70s, even though I was born in 72, those songs from these early years, they're just constantly on the radio.
Yeah.
Radio was so different then. And you had AM and FM. And it was like, you know, usually AM was pretty like where you heard the most stuff because FM was so new in the 70s. But I remember hearing these songs, but I just don't remember as a kid like thinking, man, this song's awesome. It's great. But I get older and I hear Jet and I'm like, what the hell? This is amazing. Bluebird, totally different kind of song, you know. Just like you were talking about 1985, it doesn't sound like anything else on the record. Well, Bluebird doesn't either. But it all sounds like Paul McCartney. And you know, you said Let Me Roll It. That's just such a good song, you know. This, it's riffy, it's dirty, it's raunchy, it's, you know, it was kind of, you know, throwing a finger in the face of authority, as far as, you know, and the record company didn't want him singing about drugs. And so he finds a way to sing about it where it's, you could say, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Not like that, clever stuff like that. I've got a copy of this that has Hell and Wheels on it. I don't know. There's a like a North American version that had Hell and Wheels, another great song.
Yeah.
I think in the UK it was probably just a single because he was still doing singles then, but another good song. I really could go on and on, but it's just a masterpiece. And it came at a time when he needed it. He needed to have the masterpiece.
Yes.
I think this really set him up for the rest of his career. Without it, he may have had something else, you know, but we don't know. So we're going to say, yeah, this set him up.
Yeah. I like Wings. I think this is their best album. And, you know, I think for me in my house, my mom always loved McCartney. That was her favorite. I was a big George guy, but, I think it's just it's a great album, and there's, I want to say, it still feel, you know, you can feel McCartney in this, but you could tell that he's making it his own, and that's what I appreciate about it. It's it does get what you talked about, scatterbrain, and I can, in a good way, and I definitely see that on there. Yeah, I won't go on too long about it. I know you're gonna revisit it. It's an amazing album. All right. So I have my fourth is Aerosmith, their first album, titled Aerosmith. So like when I was like 13 years old, my brother, who's 5 years older than me, like 2 weeks before graduation, he goes to see Aerosmith up in Cleveland, outdoor place called Blossom. And he went with two of his buddies, and one of his buddies, Rob, had a cousin who was a roadie for the Black Crowes, and the Black Crowes were opening for Aerosmith. So, you know, my brother gets back from the show. I got to meet Aerosmith. It was so cool, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I got along with my brother, but I called BS on him, right? So he gets, back in the day, you know, when we used to actually develop film, he gets pictures developed and shows me pictures with him and Steven Tyler and, you know, Joe Perry and stuff. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's really cool. And I had listened to Aerosmith a little bit. I want to say, let's see, that would have been around 91, 92 that he went to see him. Anyway, so that kind of got me into Aerosmith. And I think Aerosmith's arguably most popular song is Dream On, which is on their first album, Aerosmith. And so that's what got me into Aerosmith originally. That album has Dream On it, obviously, but I loved Walking the Dog and Moving Out. Those were some of my favorites. And just, you know, really Steven Tyler back then, I mean, he can still hit it, but his voice is just amazing. So I love that album. Kind of a fun story of how I got into Aerosmith. You know, that's probably my brother's favorite band. Maybe the Killers are now, because he goes to a lot of their shows. But yeah, that's how I came to enjoy Aerosmith.
Clint's grinning. He knows what's coming from me. Full disclosure, I'm not a huge Aerosmith fan.
Yeah. But
however, from this album through Rocks, I'm good. I Get Your Wings it's not as good as Toys in the Attic or Rocks, I don't think. But yeah, after the comeback, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
And I did go, I saw them on the Permanent Vacation tour here in Johnson City. And if you've seen the Ragdoll video, one of the claims to fame around here is the ending sequence where the driving down the street. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
That's filmed in Johnson City cool. While they were in town for the, that song's okay. A Dream On, I don't know how anybody that loves music, especially rock and roll music, couldn't love that song.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about the rest of that album because it's just not something I go back to. I know Mama Can because Guns N' Roses covered it. I think,
right.
I think it was on Lies or Live Era, or it was on one of those. So I know that one. I'm going to have to check it out. It's probably one of those things I just need to go back, revisit again, see if I hear things differently. Like I said, I'm good with the 70s stuff, the pre-drug meltdown stuff. But then the comeback stuff is just where I'm kind of not.
It got pretty commercial.
Yeah. I mean, all the ballady stuff. And like I said, Ragdoll's a pretty good song. Dude Looks Like a Lady's a good song. Janie's Got a Gun, that's a pretty good song. But it was the crying and the crazy. And I think there was I don't know if it was Mad TV or. There's another rabbit trail, but Mad TV or SNL or something, and they did a skit about, and it was one of those like the Time Life commercial where it's like scrolling up the screen and it's like crying and then it starts with these just ridiculous song names that have those words in them, but that's probably where I jumped off the bus, but. I like this pick. I listened to the whole album and I thought, you know, I'm hearing some things I didn't know about. Maybe I give them another chance, at least until Permanent Vacation. Actually, it's really Pump and Get a Grip where all that kind of ballady love song crying stuff starts
happening. I think so. I have I made an artist into an adjective. When Lenny Kravitz came out with, was it Fly Away or whatever the name of that song is? It was literally on the radio like every 20 minutes. And so I think when something gets overplayed, I call it Lenny Kravitz'd. And so for me, I think that, you know, being featured in Armageddon and like it is, it's sappy and not my cup of tea, but I definitely see, you know, why people would be turned off by newer Aerosmith for sure.
So, Clint, is Aerosmith the greatest American band?
No. Well, you can make an argument for it, but I'm always going to put the Eagles or Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band, above that. Maybe Chicago.
Tom Petty
and the Heartbreakers, most definitely. But I will tell you that I loved early Aerosmith, and I still kind of like it. But you nailed it earlier. Once you get past Pump, everything on Get a Grip got way overplayed.
Yeah.
You left out Amazing too. That music video. I mean, you know, the visual was great, but the song you got kind of tired of.
Yeah.
But still like the pick. I love Dream On.
Yeah.
All-timer rock and roll song.
They did give us Alicia Silverstone, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. And that will end part one for 1973. We've gotten through our 5 and 4 picks. Next time, you'll get the top 3 from each one of us. Again, thank you for listening, and watch for that soon.